This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. For decades, the elevated section of I-84 through Hartford has been a major feature of the city's landscape. It's now viewed as a barrier dividing the city in two. It has also outlived its usefulness. This week, the Connecticut DOT is inviting the public to take a look at what it's calling the I-84 Hartford Project. Anyone can drop by the open planning studio at a downtown Hartford church to meet planners and engineers who are looking at alternatives to redesign I-84. Our intern Ryan King visited the open house yesterday at Christ Church Cathedral and talked to Deborah Howes.
Well, the scope of the project is to improve the I-84 through Hartford from about, Flatbush to the I-91 interchange. And as you've seen, there's a number of alternatives. Any one of those is likely to have impacts, and that's what we're responsible for, is helping to identify what those impacts are and how they could be mitigated. Because, we want to know from people who live and work here, what that means to them. Is the loss of a historic building, so significant that we need to avoid it? Or is there some kind of mitigation, like moving it or, honoring it, but then allowing for some, redevelopment of that area or placing the highway in a slightly different place? Those are things that, at this point in time, now when we do public planning of transportation projects, we talk to the public.
And the DOT is making a concerted effort to hear points of view on the way the highway through Hartford could be designed. You can even get the feedback through text message. You can take a short quiz there. We're going to be talking today about the I-84 Viaduct through Hartford, and we're going to be taking part in their open planning process a little bit, and you can join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Joining us in studio today, Rich Armstrong is the principal engineer for the Connecticut Department of Transportation. They're helping to lead this entire initiative. And Rich, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Dave Stanky is here. He's principal of TransSystems, lead for the I-84 Redesign Program Management Team. And Dave, thank you for being here as well.
It's good to be here.
And Toni Gold is back on the program. She's a retired community investment and transportation consultant, member of the DOT's Public Advisory Committee on the I-84 project. Good to see you, Toni.
Good to be here, John.
So first of all, let's start with the process that you guys are going through. And Rich, I'll just start with you. Tell us what the DOT is doing downtown in Hartford right now. I mean, what sort of input are you taking from the public? How does this whole thing work?
Well, what is going on all of this week, we began Monday morning, and we're going through the entire week, wrapping up on Saturday morning. It's an open planning studio. We've got an auditorium where we've staffed the space with a lot of our technical folks, engineers, planners, environmental specialists, traffic engineers, and the like. And we've brought in a lot of public project information with regards to our understanding of existing conditions. We also have a number of the proposed alternatives or suggested alternatives to be considered. So it's really an open opportunity for the public to come in at their leisure when the time is convenient for them. To come in and look over our shoulders, see what we're doing, look at some of these concepts, give us some feedback. And that's what's really, really key, that we're in that planning phase, and it's so critical at this time frame to participate and to engage with us so that we understand the community's concerns, the traffic concerns. There are people who are very, very familiar with this section of highway and how it's affected the community. And that's really important as we start to contemplate solutions.
What are the things you're hearing so far? Because there's a million different concerns that people might have. Some are very, very parochial. What's going to happen to my street? And some are wide ranging. I mean, thinking about the entire state or the entire region. So I'm sure that people are bringing you lots of ideas. What are you hearing from people so far?
Well, this is kind of an ongoing public involvement phase that we've been undertaking since 2 years ago, where we began to interview stakeholders, community folks, major employers, neighborhood associations. So it's really a continuation of a lot of the gathering and public input we've been doing for the past 2 years. Some of the comments are consistent with what we've already heard, that people are very interested in a safe transportation corridor, both on the highway and on the city streets that are affected by the corridor. Many people are concerned about any changes in traffic patterns that might occur as a result of the redesign, how that might affect their street that they're most concerned about. So a lot of good public input. I think a lot of people are simply absorbing now some of the concepts that we're putting before them.
Dave, talk about your role and your company's role in working with the DOT in this project.
Yeah, it's going to change throughout the project. We are program managers for the Connecticut DOT. We're not only as a consultant firm help oversee this project, but we have many sub-consultants under us. The public involvement we're talking about is a local firm in Hartford, FHI, who's doing that. We have many different disciplines for that. Right now, as Rich said, we're in the very early planning phases and environmental phase. So really our role is more in the preliminary engineering. Rolling these out to the public, we have about 75 different options that we actually have in this in our planning studio this week that we're rolling out and talking about. Many variations of not only the main line but also the interchange locations and where that's at. As we evolve the project, we're going to go into hopefully through the NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act phase, get a record of decision. Then we'll go into the design phase where hopefully we'll have many designers working on this that will oversee right through the design process that can take several years to do. And then on to construction where we'll actually help oversee the construction and all the contractors and the designers through that process.
Of all the options that we have here, something we've heard over and over again, including from Governor Malloy, I just played some tape at the very top of the program where he had a press conference right underneath the viaduct. And it seems clear that one of the big options is not keeping it like it is. Can you explain from an engineering standpoint why this thing needs to be rebuilt in some way?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons. Obviously, the bridges on this corridor, about 80% of the area is on structure. The bridges are over 50 years old. They've outlived their lives. So this is the time to do something. There's been a lot of interest to remove this very visible eyesore from the city of Hartford. One of the options is to actually relocate the rail corridor, which actually crossed under the viaduct twice, which caused all the bridges to be built in the original, you know, construction, to move it further to the north into towards an Asylum Hill. And actually we have the option to lower the highway either to grade or below grade or in tunnel, you know, tunnel part of this. So that's been probably a lot of the focus on those alternates and what that can do.
And we'll be talking more about some of those alternates. Just one very quick question before we talk more about the community involvement. Is this a safe structure right now? I mean, should people feel confident that when you say something has outlived its usefulness and it's 50-plus years old, that it's going to, you know, hold up when my car drives over it 100 times?
Absolutely, it's safe. You know, the DOT inspects this bridge at least every 2 years, if not more. We have to maintain what they call a state of good repair. The state has actually spent about $60 million over the last 5 or 6 years on repairs to the structure to maintain that safe condition. And they've also programmed about $60 million more over the next 3 or 4 years to keep that in a good condition through the life of the bridge, through construction, what we're anticipating to be construction.
We're talking with Rich Armstrong and Dave Stanky. They're both involved in this I-84 project, Rich from the Connecticut Department of Transportation, Dave from Trans Systems, and they're taking part in a week-long series of meetings. It's all happening downtown in Hartford, the I-84 Hartford project, an open planning studio. We're talking about public involvement in the first section of our program. We'd like to hear from you at 860-275-7266. Your thoughts about what to do with the I-84 viaduct, what the better options are. You can give us a call or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. Now, Tony Gold, you've been involved in, you know, not only transportation in this region, but also specifically this project for years. First of all, what are you hearing as part of this project so far? What are you hearing from the public as you meet with them and engineers?
Well, I think the public is embracing this process, and far be it from me to compliment the DOT. I've been a pretty persistent critic for many years, but this is really a wonderful change. Not only the last 2 years, which has included this very large public advisory committee that I've been serving on, where there are many, many people from the community and from local governments and local corporations, but also this particular planning studio. I see a lot of people there, and there's a lot of enthusiasm, and people are really getting into the details, which are very complicated. But us diehard transportation fans are studying these many, many options that Dave referred to and seeing the possibilities. So I think the public is enthusiastic. I think if they don't get exactly what they want, individual members are going to say, well, I understand why they couldn't do it. Mm. And so I think it's going to serve the DOT very, very well in the long run. I can remember the days when people lay down in front of bulldozers, and I know how much of the original metropolitan system was stopped, including a section of 487, as they called it, 484. I don't even remember, right through Bushnell Park.
Sure.
So this is really the right way to go, and I'm very pleased with what the DOT is doing.
So you've been involved with this for a long time, and you've thought about what this could be.
Mm-hmm.
So now that you've been through this process and you've heard some other ideas, has your mind changed at all? I mean, are you coming around to one option versus another? And as I say, we're going to get to some of the very specific options in just a moment, but has your mind been changed by this process at all, Tony?
Well, let's say my ideas have been refined. I have always thought that I-84, as it was built in 1960 or whenever, was just like a terrible injury to the city. Split it, ugly, took over city streets. And this is the opportunity to change that, undo it. It's the best opportunity in 50 or maybe 100 years. The whole system has got to be rebuilt, and there's no one who thinks that it's okay as is. So I'm inclined towards this version called the lowered highway, which isn't quite a tunnel, but which is a virtual tunnel as it gets shoved into the side of Asylum Hill. I have some ideas about interchanges, but those are really developing, and there are many, many alternatives being shown. The most important thing, I think, is to get the ramps off of Asylum Street and Broad Street. And that makes it possible to narrow those streets to make them more friendly for pedestrians and bikes. If it's done right, you liberate about, 10 or 12 acres right on the west side of Bushnell Park. We could have a fancy new address called Bushnell Park West and a couple of new streets in there and a lot of property returned to the city's tax base. And there are other exciting development opportunities like that which could come out of this.
Rich, one of the things that I really want to get to that I find so fascinating about this planning process that you are involving city residents and people who just want to come down from the region. Obviously, that's something Tony's been working at for years, and clearly, she and others are energized by the fact that you're listening to their concerns. But you do have a balancing act here, because for every local concern and for every person who wants to rebuild a city that was gouged apart by this I-84, there's also a regional transportation need here. I mean, long before I moved to Hartford, my first interaction with the city was driving through this highway when I was moving from Pittsburgh to Boston. And millions of people do that. And so for every Tony Gold who we have to take into consideration who is going to live in this community, we also have to figure out how we take into consideration the tractor trailers and the commuters and just the people who want to go from Boston to New York on a regular basis. How do you balance that?
Yeah, that's the challenge, isn't it? It's very complex and very large. And it's figuring out how to strike that right balance. I mean, we have to consider all of the implications, all the facets of this 2 to 3 mile corridor. And there are so many facets that Tony has articulated that we're very, very keenly aware of, that the highway has scarred and damaged the fabric of the city in that area. And we're going to do our absolute best to not only repair the structure, make the highway safer, make the operations more conducive to efficient travel, but do it in a manner very differently than the way it was planned in the 1950s. You know, it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to undo much of the damage that was done. So, it's big and complex. And through the interaction and engagement with the public, we feel that at the end of the day, we will all know that we have struck the right balance. You know, when you listen to people, the commuters, the folks interested in the freight and the commerce, the opportunities for economic development, safety, all of these things are on the table. And we have an excellent engagement process. We think that we're confident we will find the right balance.
I just want to get to a quick phone call from John. He's in Woodstock, and I want to take his phone call because he tells us he's currently on I-84, I hope with a hands-free device, John. You're on Where We Live.
It is a hands-free device, John, so hopefully you can hear me fairly well on
it. We can, yeah.
I'm actually off the highway now, so I make the commute every day, and I've got to say, from Woodstock, the last 10 miles is definitely the most stressful. There's almost never a day, except sometimes in the heart of the summer, when I don't hit just a tremendous amount of traffic, both coming and going, and trying to get onto the highway to merge across four lanes of thick traffic. It's a nightmare, and, I've gotten pretty good at it. But to me, that's the part of it that needs to really almost come first is how, I'd like to hear that they're really thinking about how are people getting onto and off of this highway safely, because that's really where the congestion, just as a commuter, comes from. Putting aside the issues of to Hartford and the community and all, but just make it work better as a highway, as a route, and, start with that and think about that and then go from there. And the second part of it, and I'm going to bring it up because you guys haven't mentioned it yet, is the big dig. And I'd like to hear a little bit about funding, because obviously everybody knows how that shot well past its mark in terms of what the cost was to the city and where the thinking is right now at this early stage as to where funding for this kind of a project would come from.
John, thank you so much. Drive safely, and I think you raised some really, really interesting points. I'll save the big dig question, which I already have as one of the things I want to talk about for our next segment. But maybe, Dave, you can just address his first piece of this. He's a person who drives through the city all the time. He sees a lot of this traffic. He thinks that the interchanges don't work necessarily well. What are some things you see as an engineer here?
Well, John was dead on in his assessment of the travel through our corridor, 3 miles downtown Hartford. We have too many interchanges. They're very close together. There's a lot of left-hand on and off ramps. As you come into the downtown Hartford, you're constantly having to weave over or get over a lane or two to try to make your exit. And you have competing cars coming on trying to go the opposite direction. So we have a lot of this we call it traffic flow congestion or turbulence. And we're going to try to straighten that out. That's very important because that goes to the safety and congestion too. And we're trying to minimize the number of interchanges, obviously eliminate some of the left-hand on and offs, get rid of that. That's not a current design standard. We're trying to separate the on and off ramps to have adequate distance between them to avoid some of that turbulence. And through that, we do believe we can improve the throughput and some of the congestion and make it much safer. There's a lot of accidents. We have areas on this corridor that have four times the state average for this type of facility.
Well, in accidents and turbulence, that is what causes traffic. I mean, we need to talk about the number of cars that are on the road to begin with as part of our conversation today. But, Tony, you were saying that some of your thoughts have changed and you're still considering the options for where interchanges could go. Comment on what Dave just said. Is that sort of the thing that we need to be taking a look at, just the way that the highway on and off ramps are constructed, all of these crossing over lanes, all of this turbulence, as he calls it?
Absolutely. I don't think that's in conflict with what I'd like to see for local streets. In fact, every time there's an interchange, it impacts the local streets. I mean, just look at Asylum Street between Union Station and where it splits into Farmington. Look at Broad Street in that same vicinity and the mess where those two intersect. And where there are now three interchanges, I'm hoping there could be two. And they could be placed better and meet all the standards that Dave is talking about, because that's going to help the local streets as well.
I want to get to one more phone caller before our break. Joanna is calling from Middlebury. Hi, Joanna. You're on Where We Live as we talk about the I-84 Viaduct.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. Just two quick questions. I wondered whether in the mix of consideration there is a flyover, and whether the panel has looked at how other cities have handled this situation.
Joanna, thank you very much for the question. So, Rich, when she says a flyover, describe what you think she means there.
I'm afraid I'm not quite sure I do know. There is a flyover existing. It was done back in the 1980s. If you're going 84 eastbound and you want to go 91 north, you exit right and it flies over, literally flies over on a structure to get you to 91 northbound. So that's when I hear flyover, that's what I think of. So I'm not sure what she else might mean.
Yeah, I think, Rich, I feel the same way. I don't know if she means the elevated viaduct or sometimes the interchange. We have these third-level flyovers that
Is that what you're talking about, Joanna, if you're still there?
Well, what I mean is leaving I-84, you know, the kind of like the way it is and use it as a local means, but then build something up higher for people that want to go past the city and they don't want to exit in the city.
Ah, okay. So, and thank you very much for that. Building higher and higher and flying, literally flying over, Dave.
Well, we actually, I worked with Tony on the original hub study, and we actually did look at what we call the flyover, which was actually taking the highway and further elevating it higher in the air.
What did you think of that, Tony?
Well, I didn't think much of it, let me tell you.
I sort of knew that going in, but yeah.
But it was rejected by the engineers as well as not being practical, if I'm correct, Dave.
Yeah. One of the problems we're dealing with is a lot of the congestion and during the high commute times, which is in the morning and afternoon, a lot of our traffic is actually either getting off in the morning or leaving from this area and at night, about 60%. So when you look at that, the flyover and the through traffic is a small percentage during these high volume areas. When the people are driving through, maybe it's off peak more so. It's not congested as much, so it's not a big issue.
Well, and we're going to take a break, but I'll just ask Rich very quickly. Maybe the flyover, as Joanna talks about it, isn't practical. And Joanna, I thank you very much for your question because it gets me to ask another question, which is, look, if we're going to do all this, we're going to spend all this money, a lot of American cities have beltways. They've got lots of ways to get around a city and not go straight through the damn thing like Hartford's been doing. So as we consider this, are any of the options, you know, having a roadway that gets you from Boston to New York that doesn't take you straight through downtown Hartford?
We examined a bypass, a ring road, whatever you might call it. And of course, one was contemplated and planned back in the 1970s. And because of public resistance and environmental concerns, it was rejected by the community. And I would suggest that two things. If we were to contemplate that today, I think we would find the resistance as strong, if not stronger. We're trying to avoid impacts. And we've also discovered from analysis that it really wouldn't serve the purpose. As Dave said, a lot of the traffic in the heaviest periods of time, I-84 is really bringing people in and out of Hartford and East Hartford. So it very much is serving that locale. So a ring road really wouldn't provide much relief. I think we analyzed it and it showed us that maybe 3 to 5 to maybe 10% at most would be relieved off of I-84.
And building those ring roads through the suburbs, not necessarily the easiest thing politically, but I'll just leave it at that. Rich Armstrong is a principal engineer from the Connecticut Department of Transportation. Dave Stanky is principal of Trans Systems and their lead for the I-84 redesign program management team. And Tony Gold is on the DOT's public advisory committee on this I-84 project. We're taking your ideas at 860-275-7266. When we come back, we're going to hear from our friend Norm Garrick from UConn, who studies this stuff closely and always helps us through transportation issues. And we're going to hear some of the specific design possibilities that are there. Think about it. I-84, the Viaduct. What would you do differently? It's your chance. 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. The DOT is working on a years-long process to redesign the elevated part of I-84 through Hartford. Construction is probably still several years away. We've been talking about the open house that's happening this week in downtown Hartford. Learn more about that at i84hartford.com. Find a lot more materials about what the DOT is working on. You can also follow news about this project on a new blog of ours called Zoned. It's at zonedct.org. It's about the built environment, land use, and transportation. Looks at Connecticut as well as ideas from elsewhere. Hope you can join us there. Today in the program, we welcome in Rich Armstrong from the DOT, Dave Stanky from Trans Systems, and Tony Gold, who's part of the Public Advisory Committee on the I-84 project. We're going to take some of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. I want to bring in our friend Norm Garrick. He's Associate Professor of Civil and Environmental Engineering at UConn. He helps us through transportation issues. He'd be here with us in studio, but he's in Dallas learning about how they're rebuilding things down there. Norm, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, John.
So what are you hearing so far, Norm, in our program as you listen in that excites you, challenges you? What are some of your ideas about rebuilding this viaduct?
I think this is an exciting project. I don't think I've ever seen a project of this type in Connecticut since I've been here. What we're seeing is a multidisciplinary project that is taking into account not just mobility needs, but also the importance and the impact of big facilities like freeways on the city. And I think it's a tribute to people like Tony Gold, who is not just a critic, but is someone that wanted, that engaged the process, and I think has changed in very meaningful ways this discussion.
We heard from a caller, Joanna, who asked a couple questions, but one of the things she said is, what are other cities doing about this? When you have an elevated highway norm like this and it's time for it to come down, can we learn anything here in Hartford from how other cities have been doing this?
A lot of cities are grappling with these issues, and in fact, I think Hartford might be ahead of the curve in some ways. Some cities have removed freeways, but in most cases, they are stubs. They are just bits of freeways that were not needed. In Dallas here, there is an ongoing discussion about removing a freeway to the west, to the east of the downtown, that separates a very vibrant neighborhood from the downtown. And that discussion is going on here. Another thing that has happened here is they have decked over the freeway north of the downtown, and it's become one of the most important piece of real estate in the whole state. In fact, I was just told last night that this is the highest valued piece of real estate in the state right now, this area between uptown and downtown, just on the freeway.
When he talks about decked over, Rich and Dave, maybe we can get into some of these details. What's he talking about there? I mean, what are the options for how this would look as the I-84 viaduct comes down and we have different options for how to rebuild it? When we say decked over, Rich, what does he mean?
Yeah, sure. What we're talking about is where the topography lends itself. We bring the highway down not just to grade, but where there are opportunities. We bring it down and we drop it down below natural grade, as with the existing tunnel in Hartford where it's been decked over. So there are opportunities within the redesign options to do just that. Drop the highway down, depress it, cap over it, and it can be used for public space, for redevelopment, what have you. But it's an opportunity to use that space over portions of the highway.
And Tony, when you talk about that, it's actually returning land to the city to go on the tax rolls for people to use, for people to build on. And this could be very important.
That could happen in a number of areas, and those are very exciting possibilities. But I want to mention a couple of other things. One in particular that is raised, that could be a big problem. It's raised by the notion of lowering the highway. We all say, well, we'd like to see it at or below grade. But an interesting exercise that the consultants have done is to map all of the parking near the highway or under it, as many are. Those are mainly spaces of Aetna, the Hartford, and particularly the state government. 10,000. 10,000 parking spaces surround this little stretch of highway. And if you lower it, you're going to displace about half of them. Now, where are they going to go? And I think that this, in a way, it's not the problem of the engineers trying to redesign the highway, but one of the biggest question marks is whether the state government will continue to provide free parking to its employees, which is one of the biggest problems there. Aetna doesn't do it. Travelers doesn't do it. The Hartford doesn't do it. They have been leaders. The corporations have been leaders in encouraging transit, telecommuting, and charging for parking based on your salary. Unfortunately, the state labor contracts with the bargaining units guarantee free parking to state employees. That is medieval. I mean, that's really got to change. So this project is raising major policy issues. Funding, which I think you're going to get to, is another one. But the parking thing has to be confronted one way or another.
I can hear Norm on the phone just queuing up for this. I mean, Norm, one of the things we talk about all the time is, look, maybe the problem is so many damn parking spaces. All these parking spaces mean people want to drive into the city. It causes more congestion. Maybe we should not worry about so much parking. Maybe we should find new ways for people to get downtown, right?
I agree. And that's what we're seeing here in Dallas is with the DART system, the rail system, and they just opened a new streetcar system to the south of the city yesterday. But beyond that, one of the things I would, to piggyback on Tony's point, is that one of the things we keep talking about here is the cost or the impact of the freeway. And I think for this project, we also need to be talking about the positives, what it would could potentially bring to the city. I think we need to put some more emphasis on that, because I think if it's not recognized to the extent that it needs to, then I think we're missing an opportunity. Tony talks about the land that is being opened up by some of the changes that are proposed. But I think we need to really do a much more thorough job of understanding what those potential impacts could be to our capital city and to the state of Connecticut itself.
Dave, maybe you can talk about that and how that makes its way into a process like this, because obviously rebuilding a roadway is a very important thing, and it's one piece of this. But figuring out how we may potentially redevelop land above that roadway, how we might reconnect neighborhoods that might become more vibrant, the dollar signs, frankly, change an awful lot depending on how you consider that. So how much of that thought goes into a process like this for you?
Well, it is important. We talk about the park-in. There is at least 4,000 or 5,000 spaces that we're going to disrupt. And it really doesn't matter if it's just temporary or permanent. It's really a long-term construction project, so consider it a permanent relocation. And it does make people think about the policy. Right now there's a lot of leased spots all, you know, on grade. It's all secure lots. You can't really walk through them to get to one side to the other. So that's going to be an issue that's going to be forced us to look at. Now, as far as lowering the highway and the potential to cap over that and the redevelopment, we're going to be working, I'm sure, with the city a lot on this and what they want to do with that space. We do believe we are going to actually end up with a freeway and the ramp systems with less square footage than what's out there now, and yet get it to operate much better. So those are all great questions, and they're going to be dealt with.
There's a lot that we want to get to, but there's a lot of people who want to join us as well at 860-275-7266. So let's go to Luke calling from Hartford. Hi, Luke.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. What's up?
Good. This is Luke Bronin calling, candidate for mayor in Hartford. And I just wanted to say, you know, the discussion just turned to the issue that I want to raise, which is the economic benefits to Hartford. This is a critical opportunity for the city. You know, in a city where half of the property is non-taxable, and we struggle year after year because we haven't seen grand list growth, we've got to focus on the economic benefits of opening up this land for potential development and healing the wounds that we've lived with for so many years in Hartford. And so I think as we talk about these numbers of dropping the highway down and decking over it, and for a lot of people they seem like very high numbers, dollars that it's going to cost, we've got to look at the enormous economic benefits to the city of Hartford if we do that.
Luke, thank you very much for your phone call. Okay, let's talk about numbers, Rich. We had a caller earlier talk about the Big Dig, and a couple of things about the Big Dig in Boston. One is that it took longer than expected by quite some time, and another is that it ran over by cost by quite some amount of money. How much is this going to cost? Do we have any ballpark sense? I mean, the governor just this week has a new commission looking at some of his transportation plans, and your commissioner basically came right out and said, there's no way to budget 30 years down the road. It's what he told us. I mean, we can't figure out how much this is going to cost, because costs are always going up, and we're talking about a really huge plan here for the whole state. How about this project? I mean, what's it going to cost us?
Well, the very first thing that I wanted us to do, long before we even developed any concepts in any great detail, was to make some assumptions on the variety of options before us. So keeping the highway elevated, if that was something that we would have to do if we couldn't relocate the railroad. Lowering the highway if we're able to relocate the railroad, and perhaps a tunnel. So without really having any drawings to work with, we still felt it was important to get a sense of cost and to be mindful of the financial implications. So several months ago, without a lot of drawings available to us, we developed a cost range. And we looked at the potential risks, schedule risks, cost risks, a lot of unknowns at this stage, of course, but to factor those in and to start to think about what our budget might be. So right now we're looking at anywhere between $4 billion on the low end to $10 or $12 billion on the high end, and the tunnel representing the higher end of that spectrum. So we're hoping that as we further refine these concepts and we start to see how these develop and how the design lays out, we'll go back, revisit our cost, and see how we're trending. It's very, very important that we're mindful of our budget, because we need to know what this project is going to cost. And those discussions are ongoing as we speak in terms of how we afford this.
Well, one thing I guess I really wanted to ask you about this is we're being presented here with something like four options, which is, you know, sort of keep it as it is, rebuild a new viaduct, drop it to grade, which is something we've talked about a little bit, and tunneling the entire thing over, which is obviously the thing that would cost the most money. Let's just, as the governor would say, let's be clear here. We're not going to leave it as it is. We're not going to rebuild a new viaduct. And we're not going to build a $10 billion tunnel. Those things just aren't happening. Am I wrong somehow, Rich? I mean, we're basically talking about dropping this thing slightly below grade, having some places where the high, where the local roads are going to go over it. But there's no other option, because this is the only thing that could possibly make sense.
Well, a little different from how you're describing it. We have to look at the possibility that the highway to some degree might have to stay elevated if it's going to have to cross the railroad. Relocating the railroad is a strong desire, but it has its implications and its challenges because of the tightness of the corridor. It's not necessarily easily done. If for some reason, and we're going to do a comparison of all these alternatives, the pros and the cons, if for some reason we're not able to relocate that railroad without causing a lot of negative impact, the design would be such that it would be an improved highway corridor for sure. It would remove all the obsolete design features that the gentleman previously talked about, the left-hand off-ramps, the left-hand on-ramps. So there would be improvements for sure. It might still be an elevated highway. The good news is even with that elevated highway, we can drop it down from Sigourney Street to the west. So today it's very much elevated. So there are dramatic changes that can be achieved even with that elevated option. Now, to be clear, we're looking to drop it down, and we're exploring that in great detail.
And that involves moving the railroad somehow. What goes into that?
Yeah, that's correct. Right now, as we talked about, the railroad crosses underneath the highway, goes to Union Station, and then goes further to the west and crosses back out at a very bad skew angle. So we have a lot of structure on the I-84 viaduct because of the rail. So to move it further to the north, that would be done in an early stage. We would actually move it into Asylum Hill, and you're kind of taking the advantage of the topography. Asylum Hill climbs up quite a bit, so that railroad could actually be – that station could be partially underground. So it would basically, you know, move into that hill a little bit. You'd have a new head house and new station at that area. We'd like to somehow connect that back to Union Station, which is an historic building that would always remain. But it is a process. We have to deal with the Federal Railroad Administrative and also Amtrak, who's the owner, and work those details out. But everybody's pretty positive about that.
Before we get to some more phone calls, Tony, I'm just wondering if you could comment on this last little bit of conversation. As I sort of challenge this notion that there's really anything other than this at-grade construction that we're talking about, how do you view this?
Well, I happen to think that the option three, the lowered highway, is almost as good as the tunnel. Because it can be shoved into the side of the hill, you get a virtual tunnel in the most critical place. And because, as you indicated, it's so much cheaper, let's go with it. I mean, I don't want to beat my head against a brick wall here, which I think is what the tunnel will amount to. Even though everybody, of course, in theory prefers a tunnel, I just don't think it's going to happen. And I would like to see the time spent working out the details of the lowered highway.
It would be more of a concrete wall, but I take your point. Colin is calling from Hartford. Hi, Colin.
Oh, hi, John. Thank you so much. Love the show. Thank you for having me. I just have a quick question. For the I-84, just wondering, is there plans to have that kind of revitalize the riverfront area? I know, you know, there's been a lot of redevelopment down there, trying to open that up with the Front Street development. Also, it goes back to the question of all that government parking, the municipal parking. There's a nonprofit organization called the iQuilt that's trying to kind of make that more walkable all the way from, like, the Bushnell area to the riverfront, make that all walkable and nice lit streets. Is there any plans for the kind of, you know, synergistically getting that project to work with?
Well, I think it's a great question, Colin, very much. I mean, obviously we're talking about I-84, not I-91, which is the highway that blocks off the city from the riverfront, but there is an impact here. What are you talking about?
Well, it's interesting that he brought up the I-91 environment and getting access to the river. And when people ask, and they do, what have other cities done, I point to what we did on I-91 in the Founders Bridge area. You know, Tony was involved in that, and that was a landmark project where, as part of a highway reconstruction project, we lowered I-91, which allowed the opportunity to reconnect the city to the river, and look what that has sparked in terms of Front Street development and the convention center, et cetera. So we're hoping that with this project, not only solve the transportation problems, but also provide those economic benefits and those other opportunities that can revitalize this part of the city.
A quick call from Paul from East Hartford before we go. Paul, go ahead.
I was just wondering, why not spend more of that money on free bus service from the outer suburbs into Hartford between, say, 2:30 and 6:30 each day? If 60% of the traffic is commuters, why not just get them off with the free bus service and save a lot of money?
Paul, thank you very much. Hey, Norm Garrick, you're in Dallas. I'm teeing this up for you. So Paul wants to just, you know, provide more public transportation at a lower cost or no cost for people. Just get people off the highways altogether.
I think I would go with that plan. I don't know if the political will in Hartford is there to do this, but it sounds like exactly the type of strategic thinking that we need to have more of in terms of transportation planning in Connecticut.
How much are we considering, Rich and Dave, the Connecticut Fast Track, what we used to call the busway, which is, you know, brand new. It's opening. We're figuring this out. There's an impact to the busway on ID4. It runs right underneath it.
Well, having CT Fast Track available to us as a transportation option is critical, and we're so, you know, proud of it and pleased that it's there and that it will serve us well during the construction of this project. You know, we have to look at, we're not there yet, to see how we might have to adjust that, enhance it as part of the project. If we relocate the railroad, there's a strong possibility that, you know, CT Fast Track Corridor, that part of it would have to be relocated as well. But, you know, we're going to coordinate with that and make it part of our project. And again, it's an opportunity to perhaps enhance how it operates today.
We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about transit. We're going to get some more ideas from our guests, Rich Armstrong from the DOT, Dave Stanky from Trans Systems, Tony Gold, who's part of the Public Advisory Committee for this I-84 project, and Norm Garrick from the University of Connecticut. You can join us at 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk to the author of The Business of America is Lobbying, How Corporations Became Politicized and Politics Became More Corporate. Also, Kevin Lembo, the state comptroller, will stop by to tell us about his new plan for Connecticut's Rainy Day Fund. Hope you can join us on tomorrow's program. Today, we're talking about the I-84 Viaduct through Hartford. There's a planning process being run by the DOT in downtown Hartford this week. We're taking part in this, talking with some of the principals in this conversation right now about how we would rebuild I-84. And we want to talk about a lot of stuff. Let's go through a lightning round. We'll get to some calls, and we'll also get through some quick questions. Tony Gold, who's here. Tony, well, let's talk about how we're going to pay for all this. I mean, this is a question that's still hanging out there. What are your thoughts?
Well, this is a giant question, of course, because there is currently no obvious source of funds to pay for a $4 to $10 billion project. But I just want to mention that I want to compliment the governor on starting a 30-year ahead look, which is the first step. And I also want to point out that historically, Connecticut has been among the least funders from its own money and has depended more on federal funds than almost any other state. It's just – it's embarrassing. Denver, for example, was able to build – Colorado was able to build an entire regional light rail system in a few years around Denver, an area about the size of Connecticut – mainly from its own funds because it didn't have to wait on the feds and go through the feds. We should do the same thing. And I don't know if that's possible in Connecticut, but we've got to tax ourselves more in order to pay for highways. There's a congestion pricing study going on right now, which is designed to help pay for this. I have been pushing a VMT tax, vehicle miles traveled tax, which doesn't tax gasoline so much as how much a vehicle tears up the roads. So trucks pay more. Electric vehicles pay, which they don't pay, the gas tax. The state that has implemented this the best is Oregon, and there's a whole lot of information on the Oregon DOT website about how a VMT tax works, which shows that it actually does much better at producing the revenue with less pain.
Interesting. Norm Garrick, any thoughts about how we pay for this while also maybe changing driver behavior?
Well, I think Tony's points, I echo Tony's point, but I just want to make an additional point about who benefits from I-84 not tearing up Hartford anymore. I don't think it's just a matter of Hartford reaping the benefits. I think it's the whole region and the whole state. In most places that have very vibrant economy, the center cities, Denver, Colorado, Dallas, those are the places that are the engines of economic growth. And in Connecticut, we have hampered our cities, and I think that has affected the state's economy. And we really need to look at it from that perspective.
Brian's in Southington. Hi, Brian.
Yeah, hi, John. I'd like to add a couple of things to the conversation.
Yeah.
One is just quick, to remind us that I-84 went through Hartford because of Mrs. Auerbach and the downtown G. Fox building. And that had a big significance. And along with that was this really cut the city in half. We're not talking about the Clay Arsenal or other neighborhoods that are really disconnected from the whole city. But a couple other points is if the highway has to be elevated, can the land underneath it be developed for business so that it's not vacant or looking like an eyesore?
Well, and I think one of the things that they're talking about, and I apologize, Brian, because we have to move along to some other phone callers, but the idea of moving it down below grade and being able to build above it is certainly something that I think the folks at the DOT and in this public process they're looking at. Melvin's in Hartford with another question about this. Melvin, go ahead quickly if you would.
Sure. I work in Sina in Frog Hollow, a neighborhood like many other in Hartford with a really high unemployment rate. And when I hear about billions of dollars of investment, I immediately think of opportunities for employment. And this is going to be under construction for several years. So it's not like building a building that will be there only for a couple of years, the construction process. So when you spend this magnitude of money, it opens up the opportunity to train residents for jobs. Are there any plans to incorporate into contracts not only residency requirements for hiring workers, but also for provisions for training workers? A residency requirement for jobs would be much less meaningful if it doesn't include training provisions. Otherwise, I think this is going to be a lost opportunity.
Rich?
Yeah, we tackled this issue as we were approaching construction of CT Fast Track. We were not able to have local preferences for employment. It's not allowed by state or federal law. But having said that, you know, it is going to be a great opportunity for laborers and all sorts of talents to get involved and benefit from the work. So as we get closer to construction, we're going to look at those kind of training programs that we can incorporate in the strategy moving forward into construction. And that's a few years away.
Dave, we just have a minute left, and I got to ask you one last question. One of the things we've heard about the outlived usefulness of this highway as it is it was constructed for a lot less traffic than it has on it right now. What are the assumptions being made about how much traffic this highway is going to withstand as we rebuild it?
Yeah, that's a good point. We have to look at a projected traffic volume. We go out about 25 years. In this case, it's through the year 2040. We have a very flat projection of traffic growth right now. So there's not a lot of difference in the traffic pattern that we're predicting out 25 years than currently uses it, which is about 175,000 vehicles a day.
And that's because maybe you've got a bigger population, but you've also got more people hopefully using mass transit and other ways of getting around.
Absolutely. We talked about the Connecticut Fast Track. You got to realize we also have the Hartford line that's going to be coming on service the end of next year, which will be adding about 16 trains a day and more of a commuter service. That'll eventually go up to 24 trains a day.
Does the commuter service get disrupted if we have to move the rail lines?
We're going to make sure that we keep that continuous. We're going to rely on those transit services during construction.
Boy, I wish we had more time to talk about this, and maybe we can continue this conversation down the road. Dave Stanky from Transsystems, Rich Armstrong from the DOT, Tony Gold, and also our friend Norm Garrick. Continue this conversation online. Go to WNPR.org/where we live. Thanks to Heather Brandon for producing today's show.